Hello and welcome back to the Mobile Chicanes for another week. It's Naveen Razik here. Alongside me, it's Joshua Carroll-Walden. We've got plenty to get through, including the IndyCar opener at St. Petersburg and the big event at big NASCAR race over the weekend, which went on a little bit after the race as well. But first, we're going to talk Formula One and the brand new livery that Force India presented. We sort of are a little bit apprehensive about their starting livery during testing. But they've gone in a completely different direction and gone with the full pink. They've replaced pretty much all the silver on their car with this light pink, which is sort of divided opinions around the paddock. Josh, what's your opinion on Force India's new offering?
Well, I'm just sort of glad that it's not silver because, yeah. You know, I honestly believe there would have been a major issue when we got to Silverstone later this year. Where we just completely lose the Force India and all the greyness that is the clouds of the UK. So thankfully we don't have that issue anymore with this new pink livery. Like, it looks okay. You know, it's something different, which thankfully we've been talking a lot about the F1 liveries for this year. I don't particularly mind it. Like, I certainly prefer it over the silver one they had previously, and another great commercial opportunity for them, and just their readiness to embrace change for the financial landscape is certainly something that will be well received by potential future sponsors.
Exactly. I think part of this as well might be a little bit an up yours from Vijay Malik to the Indian government over the last few years as they started prosecuting him for various ill dealings in India. He's changed the colour of the cars to be less and less Indian, and we've now gone full pink. There's been a couple of different pink cars in the history of motorsports. We had the Brabhams, which were running in a magenta thing. We had the old Pacific Grand Prix cars. There was even a Jaguar issue. Thing as well. And of course, we've had some famous helmets like Jenson Button's pink helmet, which he ran based on his departed father, John, as well. But to be honest, I'm not entirely sold on the pink on this because I think it's a little bit off-tone, and I think possibly the best pink car I've seen would have to be the Wendy's car that Erebus ran a couple of years ago, because I think they got the colours a bit nicer on that one.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that was, with possible exception of the Irwin Tools 2013 livery, I think that was my favourite Mercedes Supercars livery that they ever brought out. Certainly right up there. So, yeah, like, not the best pink, but, you know, at least it's not, as I said earlier, at least it's not silver. That's the main thing I'm most happy about. And, it might just look bad with the rendering. Like, I mean, I think we'll get a better idea of what this car really looks like in the flesh at Melbourne with all the advanced aerodynamic efficiencies and improvements that they've got on their car on a much more complex car than what they've got on the renderings. As that's when we really know what all the cars will look like for this year.
Now, it's less than 1 week until Formula One returns. They will be going to Melbourne and the glorious Albert Park Circuit next to Lake Albert in Melbourne. But before then, the Adelaide City Council has thrown up the idea of possibly bringing F1 back to Adelaide. They're going to put a report together. And this is the City Council, and it's highly unlikely they'll be able to fund it themselves. And, of course, because the current Supercars event, which I believe is going to be called the Castrol 500 from next year, according to the latest rumours, is independently run, there are questions about whether this will actually get off the ground. It's very, very unlikely that it will, given how much money Melbourne are willing to throw at the Grand Prix. But still, personally, I think that you might get some better racing at Adelaide, but I think they might have waited a bit too late with the changes to the circuit and the like.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I mean, I personally think that, you know, that Supercars has established itself too much in the City of Churches. Like, I mean, even though F1's a global brand, you know, Supercars will always have a special and more preferred heart to the resident of Adelaide, for sure. As, the current circuit works really well for Supercars, but for Formula One, you know, it's a little bit constricted. Like, I mean, there'd only really be one place for DRS, and that's along the back straight towards Turn 8 if they decide to use and come back to the current layout, which certainly isn't the safest DRS place in the world, DRS activation zone in the world. But they could easily use the old Brabham Straight if they go back to the old circuit, which cuts straight across where Turn 8 currently is and would be much safer and much longer for DRS overtakes. So it's got potential, for sure. And, like, I mean, there are still a lot of people that would love to do a real life Adelaide Grand Prix in a simulator, as like it's been hotly demanded for a long time now for the old F1 circuit. So, like, there's demand and potential, but, you know, it's still very long odds as the carnival atmosphere of Albert Park is certainly it's certainly, you know, a very tough one to knock off and just come out and beat. So you have to have an extremely world-class proposal to even be considered to go against Melbourne. However, it is it is comforting for the future of the Australian Grand Prix if Melbourne don't decide to continue on deep into the next decade, that there's always Adelaide there ready and waiting. And also there's Sydney as well, that wants to have a crack if Melbourne don't want to play ball beyond 2023. So the future of the Australian Grand Prix, because of these rumours and news, is certainly very, very safe, which is fantastic to see. But, you know, Melbourne, you know, it definitely looks very grounded in Melbourne right now.
I think the big issue is the fact that I remember reading a story last year, I'm not sure if it's happened yet, that they were going to get rid of that old Brabham Straight, the old part of the circuit, and they were going to pedestrianise it, so a return to there would be unlikely, and I'm guessing it would be the Adelaide City Council that had to approve that one. So it looks a little bit too late. The thing I would be interested in, I don't think there's much hope of returning to Adelaide, but Tail and Bend, which is going to be completed sometime at the end of this year, probably as Supercars round in 2018, would probably be more likely, particularly because I think there is a need eventually to get a permanent race going at a circuit. The question, of course, being is that will people be willing to track out all the way to Tail and Bend?
Well, like, I mean, the thing is that the owners of Tail and Bend, even from day one, they never really aimed to get Formula One to come out there and to be a part of a bid to get it out to Tail and Bend. It's certainly unlikely. I don't think they'll have the transportation facilities to get all the people out there. I think it's just one lane road out there, so certainly extremely unlikely for them to go out there, as they basically want to get aim for MotoGP and everything that's not Formula One, so IndyCar, MotoGP, you know, just anything with wheels, you know, World Touring Car Championship, you know, Formula E, whatever, that's what they're aiming for, but not Formula One. That's never been their aim from the get-go. But, you know, that doesn't mean that the rumours won't be there, but, you know, it's just not meant, Tail and Bend was never meant for that standard. But, you know, we'll certainly see a lot of Tail and Bend from 2018 into the very, very far future, as it's certainly not going to go quiet in terms of its motor racing life.
There's certainly plenty on the calendar for Tail and Bend in the future. Now, moving over to the United States, and the big event over the weekend was the return of the Verizon IndyCar Series to the streets of St. Petersburg, and it was certainly a spectacular race. Sebastian Bourdais was a surprise winner, starting last on the grid. He went all the way to first on a street circuit, which is probably the most difficult place to do it, and not a street circuit which is particularly endowed to passing as well at St. Petersburg. He crashed in qualifying, which meant he had to start back of the grid, but the strategy from Dale Coyne Racing was superb, as well as some very lucky yellow flag sequences, which helped him to the top. And I think the best thing about this is not only do we have Sebastian Bourdais, back on the top of the podium. But it looks like Honda will really bring it to Chevrolet this season.
Yeah, it's certainly a very promising start for IndyCar this year. Like, I certainly didn't see this coming, and like, what surprised me most about his performance was he was actually at the front of the field leading Pagano with about 30 to 40 laps to go of a 110-lap race. So he certainly didn't just appear out of nowhere right at the finish. Like, he was up there keeping pace with the Penske cars, and that's something, you know, remarkable for a team like Dale Coyne Racing, who we didn't expect that much of for 2017. As an amazing performance from Sebastian Bourdais and Dale Coyne, and I think it's a little too early to say that Honda have caught back up miraculously in the off season to Chevrolet, but it's certainly very, very promising, and it gives teams like Chip Ganassi a lot of hope moving forward, and all things considered, was a fantastic weekend, there's not a lot of ways that IndyCar would have hoped to have started the season better. As Sebastian Bourdais, a complete wild card, takes out the first race. Like, I mean, it is a long season. There's another 16 rounds to go, but it's certainly a fantastic start to a very, very long season. So yeah, top marks to IndyCar for a fantastic start.
And the thing about Dale Coyne is, you actually look at their shop, which is located just on the side of Route 55. If you actually look at it, it's pretty tiny. I think it's probably just the size of a warehouse. It's just two garages for the cars, and that's it. So for them to do something as big as go on to win a race, first time, given how small they are, I'm trying to get it up on Street View. I think there it is. It's not too big. It's just a small, unassuming shop on the side of the highway in Illinois. So it's an extraordinary good performance, especially that, and from Sebastian Bourdais, and the fact that they are running Honda power as well. And that's what I'm really excited about. I think the Ganassi's move to Honda has really helped Honda get their game together as well. And I think we could really see a decent fight for the championship between Ganassi and the Honda teams, as well as Team Penske, who are, of course, the big Chevrolet runner.
Yeah, for sure. Like, I mean, you know, it's still extremely far too early to talk about championship and where everyone stands, but right now the defending champion Simon Pagenaud, he did get second at St. Petersburg, which is just what you need to do. You just need to collect points, like we all know that he had a fantastic run at the start of last year, which really set him up for the rest of the season. It looks like, he could potentially repeat that. However, the back end of the season is longer this year with the addition of Gateway, so it's going to be harder for him and anyone else to just, walk through the first up to Indianapolis with a bucket load of wins and say, I'm in the box seat for a championship. No one could really catch me, because there are more points on offer. And, you just have to be on top of your game for longer this year, which is certainly a fantastic place for IndyCar to be in, as, a lot of potential for a lot of guys this weekend. So Scott Dixon ran out the podium, following them was Ryan Hunter-Reay, Takuma Sato, Helio Castroneves, Marco Andretti, Joseph Newgarden, who had a mixed bag for his first weekend at Penske. Then James Hinchcliffe and the rookie Ed Jones rounds out the top 10. A fantastic first weekend for him, just keeping it off the walls. So, still a very open championship, and still anyone's game.
Yeah, exactly. And that shows just how... Let's have a look at the top five here. There's four Honda cars in the top five, and that does look really exciting. I don't want a domination, and of course things will change. Of course, there was some unluckiness for a lot of the drivers. Will Power in particular was very unlucky. He was in a strong position to possibly challenge for a podium, but yeah, mechanical dramas, as is the Will Power way usually at the end of the race. Spencer Piquet also crashed out as well, and as did Carlos Munoz. And of course, Charlie Kimball had a little scrape with Graham Rahal which dragged him out. Also, yeah, Ed Jones, another Dale Coyne driver. So really good start from what is a very small outfit. The equivalent would be probably, I guess, somebody.
Yeah, I think their shop size and staff size is something like Team 18 or Charlie Throkel, yeah. Racing, you know, a very, very small team.
Yeah, so a very good run from them as well. And, of course, Scott Dixon in his first race after the Target deal ended with Chip Ganassi. Only with the one race sponsor, which is a bit disappointing. You'd think a driver with the caliber that he has and the history that it has would be able to secure somebody for the season. But, yeah, other than that, a strong start for the IndyCar Series. It's next on to Long Beach. And it should be very exciting indeed. Another classic race on the calendar. Now, let's move on to the world of NASCAR, where it's all been happening. Martin Truex Jr. was the driver who triumphed in Texas, but all the action was after the race with this big beef between Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski.
Yeah, for sure, and certainly got a lot of attention over the weekend, you know, just capitalizing on what was a very barren and quiet weekend as, Kyle Busch and Joe Logano, two pretty unliked drivers. The general consensus is they're two spoiled brats. So, yeah, there was always going to be opinions thrown around on social media after the race at Las Vegas on the weekend. And, there were a lot of camera action and just the NASCAR officials they were just in another league compared to Kyle Busch and Kyle Larson in the little fist match on pit road. As you know, they just picked them up and carried them away. It was remarkable to see. You know, they were taking them down with one punch. So certainly a lot of opinions also internationally. But realistically, you know, this is NASCAR, and the last thing, you know, like any true NASCAR fan would want would be contained personalities, as, you know, that is something that, you know, most series crave, you know, just personality out there. And, yes, it's a long season, and there's a lot of chances to get to book yourself in the chase, and no doubt Kyle Busch and Joey Logano will both get themselves into the round of 16. However, you know, it's still, you know, there's still a lot riding on every single race. You don't want to just, you know, have one bad race and just suffer for the next five or six because your form's just not there. I don't condone what they do because, you know, it is NASCAR. It's like NASCAR's always never been everyone's cup of tea. But, however, you know, NASCAR will be NASCAR, and like the last time that this happened was when Casey Mears got one from my hero Marcus Ambrose at Richmond a few years ago, where it was basically a masterclass in just the one strikeout with one very solid punch from Marcus Ambrose. NASCAR did cop a lot of flack the last time that happened, as they did fine both Marcus Ambrose and Casey Mears. This time they've been very neutral and just said, you know, look, you know, drivers will be drivers. You know, they're free to do whatever they want as long as it's nothing extremely serious. Like, if they try to run each other down with their own race cars, then there's a problem. But, you know, just a simple punch-up. Yes, there was some blood. But, you know, it was just a simple, like, just a simple flesh wound. You know, just, you know, it will happen time to time. And, you know, and that is seen in, you know, the professional boxing ring and WWE. That does happen from time to time. But, however, it's a bit of a non-issue, just a general boil over of emotions of another NASCAR race. And that's happened before, and it certainly will happen again. So, yeah, just leave it as is. It will take its course. And the race this weekend for NASCAR, the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series, is conveniently at Phoenix, which is basically one of the most perfect circuits that NASCAR go to, which is absolutely perfect in terms of payback, as there's a lot of The turns at Phoenix are naturally towards the limit of grip. You can quite easily spin off, especially in the dog leg, which makes it and there's a lot of inside room, which makes it perfect for payback at Phoenix. So this certainly isn't done yet. I'd be very surprised if there wasn't some sort of aftermath at Phoenix this weekend. But we'll just have to wait and see what Kyle Busch and Joe Logano's next move are.
I think it's part of the theatre of the sport. And it is NASCAR. You won't see this in Formula One or anywhere else. You won't see it even in
Well,
IndyCar.
can you potentially see someone like Nico Rosberg, just going straight after, I don't know, Daniel Ricciardo
No.
without one full punch? You wouldn't see that.
No. If anything, they'll have a couple of heated words in interviews afterwards, and Niki Lauda will call the entire thing brainless, and that will be the limit of the retribution. But it is NASCAR, and that's what you want. I mean, you can't have every racing series being the same. It needs to have its own different characteristics and stuff. And let's face it, this is going to be probably a beef that will continue over the next few rounds and throughout the year from two very high-performing drivers. Both of them got into the championship four last year, so if anything, it should hopefully take the action on the track up to another level. It was another dominant win by Truex. He got all three stages.
Yeah, just like what I've said before about the stage system that NASCAR got still stands, and just like it was just a Martin Truex Jr. performance. Like he got out front early and he just held the lead the whole way through. Just we've seen it before from him, and that's just the type of wins that he delivers. And like I mean. Martin Truex Jr., like, he doesn't really care that much about the on-track action. He just cares about gaining the championship points, getting into the round of 16, and just, doing the best job that he can for his team and his backers. And, he did that on the weekend, and that's a job well done for Martin Truex. And, he'd just be focusing on moving on to the next round.
Exactly. If anything, the only thing that happened was, of course, Brad Keselowski did get a little bit of a chance to lead in the last few laps, but he eventually got taken out with a flat tire, giving the lead back to Truex. So yeah, that means that Truex now books his spot in the chase, and he also gets quite a few championship points, I'd have to say. I'm not sure of the NASCAR standings off the top of my head, but he would probably be up there considering. And particularly in the bonus points, which are now the most important thing, the points he carry over into the playoffs, he has got plenty of those up his sleeve. So yeah, he'll be there again, and hopefully he's able to make amends for what happened last year, which was very disappointing for him.
Like the real thing that once he and his team are secured in the round 16 is they just need to focus a lot more on the chase itself and the tracks that they will visit for those final 10 races, just to make sure that he actually gets to the championship four and then has a really good chance of taking out his first championship, as they'll be just like he's certainly not a championship favorite by any means, but it's just a little bit beyond his reach from everything I've seen of him. However, because of the way the championship is, he still can certainly take it if the chips fall his way. However, there's still a long, long way to go and a lot of data that will be collected by all teams before the round of 16 starts. So, still very early days for the championship, for Monster Energy Series.
A couple of other bits of news. Supercars, there's not much going on. They will be back in action next week at Melbourne as part of the support bill for the Australian Grand Prix. News did come in, though, that Supercars is going to try and keep the Newcastle circuit pretty much the same. There's been a bit of a debate between this and the Newcastle City Council. I think yesterday, the Supercars said they weren't going to change anything. Newcastle are still trying to change some of the things to get it out of the city using the Shortland Esplanade. To be honest, I'm looking forward to the race, and I'm kind of hoping it doesn't end up like something like Boston, but I think in general, the love for supercars, and in particular in Newcastle, which is a working class town, I think there's still, I don't think there's any risk that the race will certainly drop off the calendar at this point.
No. And like, I mean, Newcastle is also a city itself that's craving a big event to come down, to come up or down to the city itself. As it's pretty lackluster for events itself. Like, I mean, they've got Newcastle Knights in the NRL.
They might be moving in a couple of years, depending on how their form is.
Yeah, yeah, which their future is certainly under a cloud. And then that's it, really. They just have the occasional football/soccer/whatever you want to call it, you know, being politically neutral every now and then. But yeah, they're just really craving the big event. From everything I've heard, the complaints only and protests have only been coming from about 150 people maximum, compared to the thousands more that have, you know, basically, are desperately waiting for the tickets to go on sale. There's every indication that this event will go fantastically well. And, you know, just to see supercars on the beachfront, that's not the Gold Coast, will certainly be fantastic, to see as, you know, the layout itself looks pretty promising. Just a mix of Townsville and Clipsall in there. And also the race distance itself, 97 laps, is enormous for any street circuit race that you go to. So, and that's over 2 days. So it'll be a really grueling event for sure. And, most people in Newcastle, you know, can't wait as Newcastle City Council. Like, I mean, they were pretty stoked when they got the deal over places like Gosford and the Central Coast to host the next Supercars race. This has technically been a long time coming, though. You know, Supercars for the past, like, 7 to 8 years have been looking for a Central Coast / Newcastle event. They finally got it, and they certainly don't want to give it up by any means, the current layout through the city of Newcastle is a perfect advertisement for Newcastle itself, as Newcastle for a long time have been wanting to shake off that big industrial port that it shares with Gladstone off itself, and just become more of a tourist destination, with the beach being so close to the city centre. So, yeah, just Newcastle and Supercars both have too much to lose to a group of 150 people maximum, who realistically, live, you know, 5 to 10 kilometres away from the circuit itself. So, itself, as the actual residents there will be cashing in on, basically free seats to the 3-day event in late November. So, yeah, just a bit of a non-news story. Like, I mean, it's something that just was brewing. You know, it's reached its climax, and now it will slowly die down towards it, with construction and development works by the city council are expected to start very soon. So, certainly exciting times for Newcastle, and it's not going to go away before we get there in November.
Imagine a supercars race in Gladstone. That would be spectacular.
Yeah, just going through the big port, you know, Forza Horizon 3 style. That would be certainly very exciting indeed. So, yeah, just that'll be a sight to see for sure.
Oh, well, Queensland government, you need to get on it one day. We don't need to worry about going to Ipswich. We'll happily go to Gladstone. There's not much really in the other news. There was an interview that came with Shane McGisworgen last night on Inside Supercars, in which he said he's made amends with Ross Stone, which is good to see. Of course, Stone effectively got him into the competition, but there was a lot of controversy, particularly when he was set to walk away from the sport after the Erebus deal took place, before backflipping on that and ending up at Techno, which drew the eye of a couple of the members at the Erebus/Stone Brothers Racing garage. So it's nice to see that spoiled over. I think the only other news we've got is more schedule changes for IndyCar. Sorry, not IndyCar, Formula E. But nothing really new there. Although there is a bit of a new story this year that's just broken with the news that DS Performance will become an official powertrain manufacturer in Formula E from 2018-19. That brand is, of course, owned by Peugeot and Citroën. They were entering Virgin Racing. It looks like they're going to be a manufacturer in their own rights, which is nice to see. We've got more manufacturers are supporting Formula E.
Yeah, for sure. And also some news that I stumbled on last night, actually, was Sao Paulo in Brazil are getting their own Formula E E-Prix next season, which could very well be towards the end of this year, if not the start of next year, to sort of, you know, but partner up with Buenos Aires. So Formula E, you know, is also expanding its strong its footprint in South America, which is really good to see, especially when you consider the shakiness of Formula One and the Brazilian Grand Prix and the uncertain future at Interlagos. So, yeah, certainly Formula E, you know, continuing on its fantastic stride, and yeah, just the championship is still very much wide open, and yeah, just not there's nothing really going wrong right now at Formula E. You know, they get that. Basically, the only thing that could be concerning is it's too much of a good thing. So it's just you know, fantastic times for Formula E once again.
Yeah, I'm guessing as well, if they're racing at Sao Paulo, they'll be racing in the old IndyCar circuit, but would it be shortened down, which of course produced some great racing, particularly the 2013 race, where we've got passes on the last lap happening as well. So yeah, that other news, of course, Berlin will get an extra Formula E race after the Brussels E-Prix was called off. Apparently, they were looking at replacing the race in a couple of other capitals, including Kazakhstan, which will be an interesting one to see.
Yeah, pretty radical. Like, I mean, Kazakhstan's not really known for motorsport. Like, I mean, you know, they basically the only thing that the capital of Kazakhstan, Astana, has got going for it, it's got a World Expo in 2000. I think either this year or next year, they've got a like basically a World Expo going on, which is basically a world showcase. And they've basically, I think the only other thing they've got is just a cycling team. So, yeah, just it would certainly be new, but, you know, Kazakhstan and Astana is basically, it's a city embracing the future, even though that's very much a cliche. But they, you know, they're sort of, they're not Dubai, but they sort of are at the same time. as you know, they're one of the cities, you know, really embracing the 21st century, and I'm not that surprised that they're sort of chasing a former E deal, as you know, it would certainly fit into the city's, you know, vision and morals and all that stuff. So, you know, there would certainly be interest in that bid, whether or not people would actually show up. Whether or not it would avoid becoming like Marrakesh, which was basically just a race in a very lonely desert.
For a bunch of politicians who I don't think showed up.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just have to wait and see. So, yeah, just like the only race that is confirmed is Sao Paulo, the Sao Paulo E-Prix. That's the only one confirmed for the next season of Formula E. As, yeah, there's certainly a lot of cities throwing their hat into the ring to try and get a Formula E spot. So, yeah, it'll be one of the most exciting calendar reveals at the middle of this season.
Yeah, it should be very exciting. Hopefully it doesn't end up a bit like that other city in the Middle East, which is trying to get lots of motorsport Azerbaijan. Hopefully at least they fix the circuit up. So that's pretty much all we've got time for this week. Happening on the weekend, that the 12 Hours of Sebring kicks off at Sebring International Raceway. One of the premier US endurance events, probably up there. Probably even a bit more prestigious than the Daytona 24 because it is a very American-centric. It's the peak for the US sports car drivers, effectively.
Yeah, for sure. And a very, very unique circuit with a very awkward and unique and just what the hell is that last corner? Turn 13, I think it's called. You know, I've driven it myself. You know, very enjoyable corner, but just there's like I learned this quite a few years ago. There's no right way to do the final corner at Sebring, and also as well, this is going to be the first of Shane Van Gisbergen's deal with Mercedes for US endurance races. So Shane will be there this weekend at Sebring, as I think I honestly think Shane will will very much enjoy the circuit, as it's more of a grassroots, you know, just let's go racing at midnight because we can type circuit. You know, I think he'll enjoy it quite a lot. You know, who knows, he might just get the thirst to just come back year after year after year, as I wouldn't be surprised, as it is Shane Van Gisbergen after all, as I think he's only got one more race with this sort of deal that he's got with Mercedes at the 6 hours of Watkins Glen in the middle of this year. So yeah, that's just another event on Shane Van Gisbergen's very long, very extensive and no break itinerary. So I think he'll enjoy himself this weekend.
Exactly. And of course, there'll be coverage of that as well on the IMSA website, which is always good to see. Also, of course, NASCAR is back at Phoenix, another great circuit, in one of the most unique ovals up there, probably with Gateway.
Yeah, yeah.
On the IndyCar and the NASCAR calendar.
Yeah, so that's basically all it for this week, as... yeah, just I don't really know what to expect from Phoenix this weekend. Obviously, there's, you know, as I've said in the previous few episodes, you know, there's a lot of development work going on, but I don't think they'll come into play for this visit for NASCAR. Like, I mean, I think it'll come for them at the second last race of the year. So, yeah, just like whether or not the Joey Logano Kyle Busch rivalry will spill over into this weekend, we don't know. However, you know, there's a good chance that will, so that's another thing to keep your eye on.
Yes, next week it will be our Formula One preview. We will be pretty much running on the first day of the support races what's set to be a hotly anticipated Formula One season. Will the world changes bring anything new or not? Will we see finally a two-horse or maybe in the three-horse race between Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull? All plenty to be up there and determined. Also, MotoGP starts off. We've been a little quiet on that in the preseason, but we'll be looking forward to the race of Qatar. See how the big three rivalry that's going on at the moment between Marc Marquez, Valentino Rossi, and Jorge Lorenzo, who makes the bold switch to Ducati this season. Will it pay off for him? That is the big question, but certainly another cracking season of MotoGP coming up.
Yeah, for sure. And there's also going to be some new blood coming in with Maverick Vinales replacing Jorge Lorenzo, who went to Yamaha at Honda. As you know, he's only about 21, 22 years old, has only had about two seasons of MotoGP under his belt, but he is set to be a very strong championship contender. However, the experience will certainly play a part. So there's some new blood heading into MotoGP this year. And also as well, there's a few interesting calendar shenanigans on the horizon for MotoGP, with the possibility of a 20 Grand Prix calendar for MotoGP next year, with the addition of the Finnish, yes, Finland, again, a MotoGP race, and Indonesia, a brand new MotoGP circuit in Indonesia is set to be built for next year's Indonesian MotoGP race. So, yeah, just MotoGP, you know, we'll talk a lot about it this year, as it's going to throw up some quirky and some unseen stories, as, you know, we could have, you know, a lot of championship contenders. We could have two, we could have three, we could have four, you know, who knows? It's still... we're still technically in pre-season. So, and also as well, there is Jack Miller set to have his best season yet, as he's free from injury finally, and is most likely going to compete in all 18 MotoGP races this year.
Yes, plenty of talk about next week. We'll see you then. I've been Naveen Razik.
And I've been Josh Carroll.
And we'll see you next time. Goodbye.